discussions with Ajahn Suchin in Bangkok just before the trip to Burma in October 2003. Recorded and edited by Jonathan and Sarah. Speakers include Jonathan, Sarah, Jack, Christine, Betty, I, Shakti, Sandra, Sukin, and Ivan. Discussing earlier about Kalyanamitta, one of the questions that came up was, how does one know if a person is a Kalyanamitta?
Can one know whether this person is good or not good?
Well, one is always making that assessment one way or the other. One is always judging or trying to work out whether the other is good or not good, but I suppose it depends on one's own right view to some extent whether we judge it correctly.
Can we say that anyone who's not one's enemy is good friend or just friend?
But it doesn't necessarily help us to judge correctly, because what does it mean to be an enemy or a friend?
Or another way of asking that might be, what is the difference between an ordinary good friend, an ordinary friend, and a Kalyanamitta?
The one who has goodwill towards you.
Does one need to determine whether someone has goodwill towards one? Doesn't that mean that one's just thinking of oneself? When one's saying, oh, this person has goodwill or not, it's just like finding oneself important then.
Do you have time to find out who's your good friend, or you just meet this person and talk to that person, and then that person does not tell you a lie or doesn't cheat you or so on?
So then no need to think about it, I think. Otherwise, I think that when you think about it, oh, is this person Kalyanamitta or not, or it's usually the... For me, the cheaters would be unwholesome at that time, or like comparing or thinking too much of the person or judging or something, or some conceit, this person's better than the other or speaks more wisely. So I don't find it very helpful for me.
I think that the teachings helps one to be good friend to the other, not just wanting to find out who is our good friend. What the Buddha taught concerns ourselves, we consider it as I am. Mm-hmm. That person or this person, good or bad, not just the other, not thinking about the other, whether that person is good or bad, but ourselves while one is reading.
So it always comes back to cheetahs at that moment when one's thinking about the others. If one thinking about being helpful or kind, or is one just reflecting on the value of the wise words, or does one have some expectation or trying to get something for oneself?
And I think that it's not helpful just to think about the other, but when we consider oneself, what kind of friend we are to the other.
I mean, for me, if I want to have a Kalyanamitta, I just want to be Kalyanamitta first, you know. Because I always think that you treat others good, you shall receive the same result. So it doesn't matter what other people do. What matters is how you are, what you are at that time.
But in the teachings, don't we find it said that a person needs a Kalyanamitta? It's very important.
Yeah,
so then, apart from...
At the same time, we have to be a good friend too, or Kalyanamitta too. It doesn't mean you just want to have Kalyanamitta while you are not. But when Buddha taught us about the characteristic of Kalyanamitta, mm-hmm. we consider that he taught us to be Kalyanamitta.
Also, but just in the context of the other person being Kalyanamitta to us, would it be correct to think of that in terms of finding someone in this world, in this lifetime, who is the Kalyanamitta for us in this lifetime?
You make any choice?
So when we read all the references to Kalyanamitta, it's really just a reminder for us, the cheetahs, to develop ourselves ways to be good Kalyanamitta to others. Not to reflect on who has been a good Kalyanamitta, like I might say, oh, you are my good Kalyanamitta or something, but the purpose is to learn about being good Kalyanamitta and to reflect on the qualities that need to be developed. I think sometimes for people when they are just beginning to study or been studying a little and they hear many different teachers or they read many different people explain the same texts, and then it can be difficult for people to know what is right or what is not right because of one's limited understanding, and so they may think that they would like to know who is the Kalyanamit because they don't know who they should listen to when two people say something that's contradictory. I don't know if you have any advice.
And it must take quite a long time to learn to know who's one's Kalyanamita, while we can understand oneself while we are reading.
So when you say it takes quite a long time to know, one just has to keep listening and reflecting and knowing one's own cheetahs to develop understanding, so one knows that when one hears something, whether it is right.
There is no happening, no event happens. How can you know whether that person is good friend or not? When one is in need, can one know who's who?
If the person isn't put to the test as a true friend, how could you know whether they're not just a fair weather friend?
I've always thought that Kalyanamitta wasn't just a social friend or a supportive friend, but was someone who could teach you the Dhamma. Is that a wrong understanding of it?
Have good friend, but that friend has wrong view.
I have many, many good friends, but not many of them know about the Buddha or the Dhamma. So that they are kind and loving friends, and if I was in trouble, they'd be there to help me, but they know nothing of the Dhamma. So is there a difference? The Kalyanamitta, would that not be someone who knows the Dhamma well, and who you can lean on a little?
As long as that person doesn't hurt you, it's all right. In one way, not in many ways. That person can help you on Dhamma too. So we have to separate your good friend who doesn't know anything about Dhamma and maybe your good friend who knows Dhamma and who helps you too.
So perhaps I can be the Kalyanamitta for the person who knows no Dhamma, less than me.
Conversely, the person who helps one with the Dhamma may not help when one has other difficulties or problems or practical problems, but I think it doesn't matter, otherwise it's just one's expectations again and thinking of oneself again, and one can just appreciate others' kindnesses or help in when it arises and then let it go. Not one doesn't need to think that someone should help in other ways because they help with Dhamma or something like this. Do you think?
To be good friend is all right, but to be good wise friend is better, to know how to help. Because sometimes it doesn't mean that you have to help that person like the others do, because it's not the way to help them. But if you know how to help, maybe you just do not say anything at all. You do not help now, at this moment, but later on, that way can help the person too.
I think it always has to depend also on one's limited understanding or judgment at the time. I mean, sometimes one may try to say something which one thinks is helpful, but one might know that the person doesn't really want to hear it or something like that, but one knows maybe later they'll reflect on it. But it always just depends on one's limited understanding at the time of what is helpful, and sometimes one gets it right and sometimes it's the wrong time, but one just does one's best.
So these are basically moments of Dhamma, moments of wholesome Dhamma. And it's condition, it's all condition. So through development of right understanding, you know, it will be conditioned for wholesome moments, such as, you know, being friendly to other people, being helpful, being Kalyanamitta, and so forth.
Can one keep in one's mind not just wanting to have good friend, but thinking about whether one can be good friend all the time?
This would be like metta, I think, wanting.
Metta in Thai language or in Pali is metta, mit and metta.
But they have the same root.
Yeah.
And I think metta is really defined as wishing for the well-being of another, thoughts of friendliness or thoughts of wishing for the other's well-being towards another person that's present at the moment.
On Earth, Ramadas as friend is kusala citta. To be good friend is to have kusala citta.
How do we know if the wishing for the other person's welfare is wholesome or attachment and mana and stuff
citta,
like that?
Our own citta.
Does it have a characteristic? Is the characteristic between...
And from lopa, dosa, moha.
What about if the lopa is subtle lopa and so forth?
Even so.
What about the moments of mana that as soon as one notices that there's...
Nobody does not see the mana as mana because it's me.
So when the mana is there, it's mixed up with the wishing for
moment,
the well-being.
Different moments.
But the characteristic of one versus the other will be...
I think that mana can be known when it arises like dosa. It's hard, it's harsh, it's not moderate.
Mostly, I would say, though, mana is more apparent in one's daily life when it conditions dosa, as it often does, because the other person hasn't acted towards us in the way they should and that sort of thing. But the mana that comes from being a bit pleased with oneself, for example, seems different somehow. Because one is a condition for dosa and the other is a condition for attachment or pleasant feeling.
I think the first one may just be attachment to oneself, like why didn't he treat me properly? It may just be clinging to oneself, finding oneself important. Sometimes it's not clear whether it's attachment or mana or even self-view. They follow each other so quickly, I think.
When one is trying so hard to know, that's not the moment of understanding. But whenever it arises, it has its own characteristic. Like dosa has its own characteristic, and mana also has its own characteristic too. It's the moment of uneasiness at that moment of having mana.
How can it be a moment of uneasiness when it's accompanying lobha moola citta?
Because all kusala are uneasy.
Restless. Like restless.
I'm not sure about your earlier comment, though. I would have thought that if we react with aversion because someone has acted towards us in a way that we think is inappropriate, that must be mana that conditions that kind of...
Always must.
Not always. So could be
other conditions. Yes.
So what would be the distinctive condition of mana then as opposed to those other conditions, the other things that...
That when one has different ideas, is then not mana there?
Well, the other ideas that I mention, one may not think them. I mean, I'm just assuming that one reacts with irritation, for example, when...
Sometimes...
No, not always. But if one does react with irritation...
I think that one can know the moment when mana arises, but one doesn't know what to call it, whether it's called mana or not.
Right.
But mana is there.
It seems to me there's a lot of mana in one's daily life.
Other. See, just look. What do you feel? What do you think about that person?
I think there's a lot of comparing going on all the time.
So fast. Even the Arupa Brahmas have mana. Yeah, no one there. Just I am there.
Sometimes the comparing isn't what one would think of as being unwholesome, but still it's there, and it wouldn't be wholesome for sure, so it must be.
I think that when there is comparing, it's mana, but it's not necessary to compare. Just live alone. There can be conditions for mana to arise as long as it's not been eradicated yet.
Right, because you think I live alone, everyone else lives with someone else.
How great!
Oh, how terrible!
Yes, so long we have defilement. These are common things. So we just have to try to understand and recognize this characteristic as it arises.
There is only one way to know it at the moment when it appears, directly, when awareness is aware. Otherwise, it's the moment of trying to name it, to call it, to know just the label.
Ultimately, it's not important whether it's mana or whether it's attachment to self or a particular kind of wrong view. The fact is that it could be any of these things, but it is the fact of it being there as an underlying sort of pervasive reality in our life that is to be understood.
Don't you want to have mana at all?
I can't see it does much good, I must say.
Yes, but don't you want?
I must want to, because there is so much of it, so presumably I want to have it.
Are there moments that you don't want to have mana at all?
Probably not.
Impossible. That's why one has to understand that characteristic as just a reality. Otherwise, there's no way to have less mana.
Sorry, what is impossible?
Not to have mana at all.
Oh, I see. I thought you meant not to want.
Wanted or not, it's always there. Right? Yeah. Wanted or not, it's always going to be there until then.
Sometimes I find it scary how much mana there is, but this is just thinking about it, so it's also just useless. Yeah.
See that
finding more.
We are thinking that mana is great, lots of mana, but actually it's much more than that.
Yes.
All our kusala is much more than we think.
All we do is touch the tip of the iceberg.
The way I look at it too is that we're not an arahat yet, and we're far from that. You know, so the only thing that we need to concentrate on is learning Dhamma, listening to Dhamma, and learn, you know, be near Dhamma.
The thing I found most helpful was always trying to think of the dust rag, you know. Sariputta's dust rag, you know, be like a dust rag, or whatever they call it.
Yes.
You know, ever since I learned that in Sri Lanka, I've always found that to be helpful to me as I don't know if you want to call it a self-test, that when mana is there, and if the jittas arise to cause thinking about mana, thinking about the dust rag, that is, then that's the test for me to know whether the mana's there.
And there can also be mana in being the dust rag, too.
So, want to be a dust rag, proud of being a dust rag. Okay.
Well, like, it's not dust rag yet.
It must make metta difficult to develop, having so much mana. Seems to me, as soon as there's any kind of recognition of moments of metta, then it's a condition for mana.
As long as one is not an arahata yet, no matter how much metta one has, there's still mana.
So really it's not a question of how much metta or how much mana, but it's a question of understanding the reality of the moment.
When there is awareness, it's aware of the reality which is conditioned and arise, so it can know the accumulation from that moment, traced back to eons ago.
Just changing the subject slightly, but is it correct to say that the moment of metta is a moment of samatha?
What is samatha then?
Well, that's a good question. Certainly, I think samatha is the kind of kusala that is developed through the mind door.
Which is not level of dana and sila. But not the satipatthana.
If one is contemplating an act of dana, the dana has not yet been performed.
What do you mean contemplating?
Planning an act of dana. Because it's not actually dana and it's not sila, I don't suppose it would be...
No, because one is thinking about dana.
I see, so that's part of, but not yet completed. I'm a little bit confused about the kinds of kusala and the kinds of kusala kamma. I know that kusala kamma patta, there are 10 kinds, I think, and they're the opposites of the akusala kamma patta. And then there are the punya kriya vattu, which are another classification of kusala. But I'm not quite sure what the correlation between the two is. Like, is punya kriya vattu maybe kusala that is short of, that is not actually kamapatta, is that right?
It's like you said before, that one is thinking about giving but not give yet.
Before you've said to us, and this is something that's actually very controversial on our discussion list, before you have mentioned that only kamapatta bring results, that other kinds of kusala or akusala are just ordinary, they don't bring results. Does this mean that kusala that is classified under punya kriya vatu but not classified under kamapata doesn't bring results?
We have to consider the citta at different moments. For example, when there is intention to give, that is kusala citta, but the act of giving hasn't been done yet. So can we get result?
Well, you say no, but other teachers say yes. So one needs to have a bit more detail, and because it's something that's very controversial. Most teachers say, oh, yes, even those other kinds of kusala bring results.
So then think, just think, but not give.
Because one
can get results from thinking as well.
Then all we have to do is just think all day, think all the good things, but don't have to perform anything. So what does it do? Nothing, right? We can just say we can want to save the kids all around the world. We don't want any more hunger. So we're not going to feed them. We're not going to provide any donation, nothing at all. Is that good enough? No, right?
What other people say, what they say is that, of course, there is a difference, but Kamapata brings big results like rebirth or whatever, but then there are so many little bits like each moment of seeing or hearing or whatever. And do we have any references?
They would say the same when they read that the akusala citta condition the vipaka, but they do not consider what level of akusala citta.
Well, they do consider it.
If they say that kusala citta or akusala citta can condition vipaka, right? So they do not consider what level of akusala citta will condition the akusala vipaka at all. If they just say that any akusala citta will bring the vipaka. And
I'm talking about well-known Abhidharma teachers. What they say is that, okay, so you can't say, right, this is the cutoff line. Any akusala citta is akusala karma bringing result, but different degrees of result, like there's results such as rebirth cheetahs, and there are results like little moments of seeing and hearing now. And when they ask for specific references, it's difficult. Last time I went back and I talked about the three vata and also about the different conditions like upanisya, pachya, and kama pachya. But it's very difficult to find a sutta reference or Abhidharma reference which specifically says it must be kamapata to bring result.
Is there any difference between akusala citta and akusala kama?
No. But not between akusala citta and akusala kamapata.
Yeah.
Then there's big difference.
Yeah. Can akusala citta only?
Trying to
reality at this moment. At this moment of seeing, there is lobha or akusala citta follows. Can that bring result? While one is walking, just walking, can it bring result?
I say no, because I know that the correct answer, as you've told me, but really in practical terms, there's no direct experience of what is bringing results at this moment.
They just want the word, exact word. But the exact word are in Tipitakas, like kilesavata, kamavata. Is there any difference? See, it's there. In Tipitaka, kilesavata and kamavata. So, what?
Before you gave the other example about, well, one differentiates between kamapachya and upanisya pachya, but then we also have karma by way of upanisya, so I don't know quite how that proves the point.
There are three upanisya, the aramana upanisya, pakatu upanisya, and anantara upanisya. Only three.
So we can say that karma is decisive support, so sometimes karma is referred to as being...
Karma is karma, and right. Decisive support, the pakatu upanisya patriya, is different
quite
pachya.
Separate, right.
But whenever there is kamapachya, which produces result, upanisya pachya also is there.
Right.
Different pachyas.
Right, so it's always supporting it.
So
here, this is what our friend who's an Abhidhamma teacher mentioned, so I think natural decisive support condition is one of the most important conditions. Karma is the natural decisive support condition for the vipaka it creates. So this is wrong, or one should say karma and natural decisive support condition arise together to bring about the vipaka. So I wondered at the time.
Otherwise there must be only one pajjaya, but there are two pajjayas.
Right. What he said was karma is the natural decisive support condition for the vipaka it creates. When repeated frequently, kusala and akusala become habitual and are powerful inducement for the future arising of kusala and akusala vipaka, even in future lives. This is the common idea. So I think one can just say that when there is karma, there has to be upanisya.
Only decisive support doesn't bring result of vipaka.
Right.
But when there is karma, it brings result with the pakatu upanisya, yep, or decisive support. There are so many karma, which one will produce result by the upanisya?
Right.
Decisive support.
While one's talking about pakatu upanisya pachya, we know that the conditions that condition, which can be concepts, come under aramana pachya and pakatu upanisya pachya. When we talk about climate or weather or one of these things, or friend being pakatu upanisya pachya. For example, let's say it's wet and raining outside, and this is just a concept, so one thinks about it, and then maybe as a result of thinking about it, one comes inside and listens to Dharma. Is this the sense that it's pakatu upanisya pachya? Is it because of thinking about the concept?
One's own environment in the past too, that is accumulated. For example, when it rains hard, someone may get cold, but someone might not. Right. By previous accumulation of such and such weather and environment too.
So in fact, what is experienced is the cold or the heat. So maybe the cold is a condition for one to be sick and not hear Dharma, for example. So it's the cold that is experienced that is actually the condition at that moment. When you talk about the weather, it's the concepts. So
weather concept, heat and cold, right temperature, low or high. It's not concept.
But if we talk about the weather, it's a concept, but the cold
about
but the cold
heat
that is experienced.
Cold, yeah.
So when we talk about the weather being the condition, it's not just thinking about the weather, it's the rupas that are experienced on account of it. That, same, for example, if you say, oh, a friend is pakatu upanisya pachya, it's because of the sounds that are heard or the visible objects seen that are the condition. Does this also apply to when we talk about sabbaya sampajanya, clear comprehension of what is suitable? One says, oh, okay, someone might say, oh, okay, escaping from the fire is suitable or whatever, but this is just a very, very superficial level because it has to relate to satipatthana at this moment. So knowing what is suitable, so one could say, for example, that oh, all right, if one's too cold, maybe no conditions to hear or listen to the Dharma. So again, it is the rupas experienced on account of the weather or something like that. Was that right? So are they almost the same in that sense?
When we study Dharma, we think about the reality in the past, which conditioned the present moment too. The accumulation of everything in one's life, not just this life, but previous lives too, can condition like or dislike of the object, or illness, or the uneasy moment through eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body. Even one experiences the same object, but the difference of the accumulation, pakatu upanisya pachya, conditions such very different moment. Feeling is different, yeah, and all jetasikas too.
So we may, for example, all experience the cold air conditioning, but for each person, well, of course, there will be different jitas for some people, attachment for some, aversion, but also the rupas experience. For some people, they will experience heat. For some people, cold, or depending on the accumulation.
Salty, everything.
To what extent can we say that two people do experience the same object anyway?
Because now, like now, this
right,
moment.
But I might be hot because I might be wearing too many clothes, and mm-hmm. someone else might be cold because they're not wearing enough
everything
clothes.
Everything is conditioned.
Everything is conditioned. So let's say that, well, I'm thinking of this concept of objects are desirable and undesirable. Itta and anitta, is it? Ittarom and anittarom. So let's suppose the temperature now is ittarom.
For who?
Well, that's what that's
In itself is ittarom.
That's my question. Yeah. Thank you. What's the answer?
The answer is that who knows? Because the citta which experiences arises before the lobha or dosa or kusala.
But according to the Abhidhamma, what is the answer to that
question? Nobody can judge because all rupas arise and fall away so fast.
But if you say...
But each rupa must have a characteristic of pleasant or unpleasant, ittaramana or anittaramana, right. In itself.
In itself.
Yeah. You may like it or you may not like it,
right.
But it has to be that.
But then does that inherent characteristic vary from one person to the other? Can we say that...
What moment?
Well, can the temperature in this room be ittarom for one person here and anittarom for
when
another?
When kusala citta or akusala citta arises, for example, when lobha arises, it is attached to that very moment. And when dosa arises, it dislikes the object instantly. But before that, the vipaka experiences the ittaramana or anittaramana.
Let's say, for example, that there's thunder. So for everyone, they suddenly hear a very loud sound of thunder. Well, we can say it's probably inherently undesirable object. And for everyone who hears it here, akusala vipaka through the sound.
As much as we can say is that generally people like it, it's pleasant. When people do not like it, it's unpleasant.
Yeah.
That's all.
But forgetting about whether people like it or dislike it.
Who can tell?
About whether there's vipaka to... So, for example, if someone is in the room, is deaf. Let's say someone is deaf and there is thunder in the room, then no conditions to hear the undesirable object. Or let's...
And also desirable.
Desirable.
Because that person is deaf.
Or let's say they hear a very muted version of the undesirable object. But would one say that actually the thunder comes and they hear it, but they just hear very slight... sound. Is it still...
Nobody. It's only the moment when citta arises, vipaka, and then kusala or an akusala.
But must there be akusala vipaka because it's undesirable?
When the object is unpleasant, or when it's time for akusala vipaka to arise, it experiences the unpleasant object. One can know that the citta is what kind of vipaka. One can tell whether the object is the ittaramana or anittaramana, if one can know.
Can one say, for example, there are these examples in the Samoha Vinodini about pigs eating dung, for example, and how it's akusala vipaka for everyone who sees the dung or smells the dung. So what I'm saying is, for example, everyone hears the thunder, even someone who is deaf and only hears very slightly. I mean, they may like it afterwards, but can one generalize and can one say there must be akusala vipaka for everyone?
I cannot, because it's time to think over it all day, all night, all year, all life, to specify each object as being pleasant or unpleasant.
So cannot say that.
Impossible.
So, for example, let's say we all open this Dharma book. We cannot say there must be akusala vipaka.
I think that when we talk about the moment when citta experiences an object, after that the kusala citta or akusala citta arises, but we cannot tell
no.
whether the object is pleasant or unpleasant.
All right. So, because we're having some discussion about this on the list, and so for example, the example in the book about for every pig seeing or smelling the dung that gives in the Samoha Vinodini, can one really say like this that for every pig must be akusala vipaka?
No pig, no human being. Akusala vipaka is akusala vipaka.
Vipaka, right. Can one say that there must be akusala vipaka for
unpleasant objects?
Right, but one cannot say it at this particular moment. No, cannot generalize, right? And I think before you've said the one example that one can know for sure is if we all see the Buddha must be kusala vipaka. The sight of a live Buddha, there must be kusala vipaka.
Because what one can say is that when it's the rupa conditioned by kusala, kamma, usually it is pleasant object. But when one has wound, even the body, see, it changes again and again and again.
So really cannot specify at all.
It's to think.
Other factors come into play also, like the gamma of the person who's experiencing the object. If no gamma to experience that kind of vipaka at that moment, then if everyone else is experiencing akusala vipaka, but that person's gamma is such that no conditions at that moment for them to experience akusala vipaka, then they wouldn't.
And it's so short, just the rise and fall away.
I think also that immediately the sort of idea of something or some person or some situation, and as you say, it's so short and just one moment of vipaka gone.
And that is only thinking, while not developing the right understanding of reality which appears as not self.
I remember once bringing up the example of something I read about in the newspaper of two young boys who were walking along a railway track and they didn't hear the train coming behind them, and the train sounded its horn, but for some reason the boys didn't hear and they got unfortunately killed. But possibly we can say at that particular time their gamma was such that there are no conditions for ear sense to hear the warning sound, which in itself may have been akusala vipaka, I suppose, if it's a loud unpleasant noise, but then would have saved the life of the boys had they heard it.
Yes,
so many factors.
But what about not thinking about two boys? Any moment when citta experiences the unpleasant object, it has to be the akusala vipaka. Two or one or ten or hundred, it doesn't matter.
So why do we read, to give an exact reference, for example, from Samoha Vinodini, why do we read something like this? Although dung-eating pigs and so on smelling the odor of dung become joyful, thinking we shall get something to eat, nevertheless their eye consciousness in the seeing of the dung, nose consciousness in the smelling its odor, tongue consciousness in tasting its flavor is only unprofitable result. Because there are so many different vipaka, so one would think there must be many different vipaka. Is it just a generalization? Yeah, one's just saying that at the moment of experience of undesirable object, it's akusala vipaka, that's all. And when it has the reference earlier, I'm going on about this a little bit because it comes up quite often on the list, the reference earlier to average people. So it's saying, okay, well, mostly we have an idea that this is akusala vipaka or akusala vipaka, but it's just a general idea, but in reality, it can only be determined by the vipaka. Is that right?
And one can understand that there are two types of vipaka, akusala vipaka and kusala vipaka.
Right. This is a slightly technical question that came up quite a long time ago. When we talk about the questions that to be set aside, the tapaniya panha, these questions that ought to be set aside, is it A, they ought to be set aside because they're of no value and it wouldn't help us to have answers, or ought they to be put aside because it would be detrimental to discuss or continue talking about them? Do you know what I mean?
one shouldn't pay attention to such questions, right?
Right.
Just because it's useless, not because it's harmful, but just waste of time. It's
know exactly by oneself. Why do we take time?
Just waste of time.
Can we talk about a visible object for a minute? The visible object that appears now is just the object appearing through the eye door. Can we say anything more about it than that? Because why,
developing
if it's
understanding
that?
Because we used to take many things out of the visible object, like people and things, right?
Right.
So the reality of visible object is that which can be seen. Keep in mind, even right now, that what appears is the reality that can be seen. In order to have less attachment to the nimitta and anupayanchana and the idea of people and things.
Can we say that within the visible object appearing now, because we pay attention to certain things in particular,
because of avicca,
avicca
and sanya,
right,
and sankara
and attachment,
even a moment of have the idea that it can appear because it arises and touch or contact the eye base, otherwise it cannot appear at all. Just only that moment.
That seems so far from the reality of the present moment.
Be understood in order to develop and discuss, because there are many moments in experience with avicca.
So the whole idea of the world out there is based on what appears through the eye door.
Ignorance and sanya and sankara, khanda.
Although I suppose for the person who's blind, for example, they still have the same idea of the world out there, but it's based on experiences through other doorways. Mm-hmm. Does it reflect our deep-seated wrong view of idea of self and...
Whether there is wrong view or not, depending on that very moment, at this moment of seeing, one can understand whether there is wrong view or not.
Mm-hmm.
No view, just see. Mm. But sanya is there, and the idea of someone or things in or out of visible object is always there. So in order to have the vicca understanding is the moment when there is even a glimpse of understanding that this is only visible object which appears, nobody in it. And there will be less attachment to the nimitta and anupayanchana of the object which is seen. Begin to see or to understand visible object as just a reality. And this is the beginning. If there is no moment of this understanding, how can it develop to the degree that it's only a reality? Because there must be no self who sees, hears, and so forth in a day. All day must be the understanding of nama and rupa as different realities. Otherwise, it's useless just to talk about visible object and citta and cetasi and rupa and no direct understanding of reality which appears.
All I can say is that it seems so remote, so far removed from
the... It must be like that. Because one begins to understand when is avicca and when is vicca.
I'm a little bit surprised that you are saying vicca and avicca, because I would have thought it was a question of wrong view and right view.
Vicca, can there be sammatiti? Because vicca and sammatiti is the same.
Right. Yes, of course. And if there's vicca, then there's absence of avicca. Does it mean that avicca and maybe micchaditti are much stronger through the eye door than through the other doorways then? Because it seems that our big misconception about the world seems to be all through the eye door rather than through body door, for example. And
body door, understanding, rupa as just...
Now, there's no understanding
same
there either. It was all tied up with the... related to the...
When there is awareness of a reality through one doorway, that can be the beginning of understanding that reality, but no understanding of the reality which is not aware of yet. So just one characteristic at a time, depending on awareness itself, which one it is aware of.
Talking a little bit more about the nimitta nanupiyajana. So in the beginning, when there's a little sati, it's very superficial because there's no real detachment, and in between there are ideas of self. Can one say there is the beginning of understanding of characteristics or nimitta, but not of any details, anubhyajana? Can one say that the understanding of the details comes after understanding of nimitta characteristics, or is that wrong?
Whenever there is seeing, there is the attention to the nimitta, right? And also the attention to anubhyajana. These must be...
But I suppose the arahant also pays attention to the visible object, does he?
Everything in life is integrated. He taught everything.
So can this avicca that is so present and strong, can it be known, avicca?
Understanding can understand everything as reality.
What would be the characteristics of the avicca that conditions us to take the world as we see it?
Avicca does that all the time. Avicca itself doesn't know anything, cannot understand reality as it is, and lopa is attached instantly, arising together. It works with the avicca, lopa, and avicca and lopa work together.
It seems to me that if there's to be any mindfulness, then because of our strong conditions for ignorance and wrong view, that mindfulness has to be prompted somehow, because very, very weak.
Prompt it?
Well, that's the danger. If it's weak and one thinks it has to be prompted, then there's a risk that one is going to think in terms of prompting it by giving oneself reminders or having an alarm set to go off every 5 minutes or something like this.
So one can understand how long it will take to understand reality as reality, each reality, so that there is no wrong view left.
Seems to me that this is why reading the Dhamma or listening to Dhamma or having Dhamma conversation is so important, because it's a condition for these sort of reminders, but not necessarily, could be, but not necessarily in a way of adding to the idea of self who is developing understanding or something like that.
This is going to be the well-established understanding of anattaness, because why does one hear, why does one read, why does one discuss? Just to have the accumulation of understanding, ready for a moment when there is awareness, there can be some understanding grow little by little.
So could we say then it doesn't matter how much ignorance or how little understanding one has of anattaness, that the main thing is to be developing these conditions so that right. When the occasion mm-hmm. is there. Yeah. What do you think about that, Christine?
I was just thinking, when you were saying a moment ago about it's encouraging a view of self, if you have little alarms going off, it's a self trying to develop mindfulness. But isn't it a self that is going to read the Dharma and discuss the Dharma with friends? Isn't that a similar thing to... setting an alarm, it's somebody doing something with an aim, an objective?
It could be, if one simply did it with the idea that by doing so there would be more awareness or more conditions for awareness or understanding.
So I'm just thinking with me, with regard to that, with conversations and reading the Dharma and listening to Tang, in a way it's not something that you choose to. It's something that you can't not do. It happens because of whatever
conditions.
Whatever. I've forgotten what I was going to say.
Well, you might do it because you're maybe a bit upset or disturbed, whatever, and you see it as a good way of taking your mind off that and having a more useful line of thinking, but no idea of that bringing more understanding.
True. But isn't there... it springs to mind a discussion people had a while back on DSG about keeping precepts, I saw that as a good thing to do, that's something that the Buddha wanted us to do, but a lot of other people saw it as, as a sign of someone who thought there was a self that could do things, but also saw it as clinging to rites and rituals. Mm-hmm. And it's really very confusing. There seems to be a... and I guess it was never settled for me if keeping the precepts, is there a difference between valuing keeping the precepts and what did they call it, silabhata paramasa, it almost, I'm a bit lost here, why would the Buddha teach us to do things or recommend or want us to keep the precepts, and then the very keeping the precepts be viewed as clinging to rites and ritual?
Do you think that keeping precept is ritual?
No, I didn't.
Do you mean taking the precepts? So when you say keeping the precepts, do you mean a moment of abstention, or do you mean taking a sort of a vow to follow five precepts in one's life, and I'm a five preceptor?
No, not necessarily that. I'm not. I do tend not to talk about things happening momentarily. I know, but just valuing
intending to keep
the precepts, not having it as a right or a ritual or a sign that you wear saying I've taken the precepts. But I was just quite amazed at the reaction, mainly on with a lot of people immediately seemed to assume that if you valued precepts it was a rite or ritual. It was clinging to,
So I think the question is, should one try to keep the precepts?
Or abstain from killing? That's all. When there's something that one might kill, then there is the moment of abstaining from killing by the viruti cetasika. I think that when people talk about keeping or observing precepts, it seems like one would say, I will not kill, I will not steal, I would not. But actually, it's just the moment when there is abstaining. And that moment is kusala citta, not of dana, but of sila. And when there is the intention that I'll not kill, that moment you don't have to think that I am taking one or the first precept. See, just intention not to kill, right at that moment. It is so natural, also, what you call it, daily or... because usually in a day we do not kill, we do not steal, so it's ordinary life.
And mostly there's not the opportunity to not kill. I mean, we just don't kill because there's not the chance of killing. And
sometimes when you see the insect or ant or things like that, there can be a moment when you do not kill without saying or thinking that I'm observing the first precept.
And if there's no opportunity, as you say, Christine, then how can you call that keeping the precepts?
There was a lot of discussion about the fifth precept and about...
There can be a moment with things like that.
But perhaps if one doesn't reflect on the harm or the danger, then there will be more moments. So maybe by reflecting or by taking some undertaking or whatever, this will be a condition for fewer moments, which will be condition for less other akusala.
One does many things in a day by pakatupanisya pachya. the accumulations. So by understanding the anattaness that there is no I, but it depends on conditions, whether that moment is killing or not killing.
You're talking a lot about Pakatupa, Nisya, Pachya in terms of accumulations. Usually when we think about accumulations, we think of moments of kusala and akusala, but you're talking about...
Pakatupa, Nisya, Pachya is wider than that. So and kusala is also Pakatupa, Nisya.
So when you're talking about accumulations in terms of Pakatupa, Nisya, Pachya, you're talking about a wider sense of accumulations. Accumulation to feel hot or cold or to like that. I'm asking because you refer to accumulation so often. So one friend asks quite often, what does Kunsuchin mean by accumulations? Is she referring to just moments of kusala and a jhau and a process or what? So do you always mean the same thing or does it change a little depending on the context?
Includes all
what?
Realities. All reality. And also concept.
Okay. Experience of all rupas as well. So each moment of seeing or hearing, each concept that's thought about, everything.
So difficult to understand.
All dharmas.
Yeah.
Right.
The complex of all these. For example, the process of seeing, starting from Panchadvara Vachana. Right? And pasa arises with each citta. The pasa which arises with jakku vinyana condition the sampatichanna by way of anantarupa nisyapajya, but it conditions the santirana by way of pakatupa nisya. See?
The pasa.
The pasa. So lots of things that we to learn, but
it depends on one's ability to experience. But Buddha experienced all, so he could tell us all by different bhajya.
So when you refer to accumulations, include all of this, right? Each citta, each.
How can it come without accumulation, each moment?
Is there a particular Pali word for this very wide meaning of accumulation? Dhamma? Or Pakatupanisya?
So we can say, is Hetu also Pakatupanisya? There are six cetasikas which are Hetus. Is Hetu also Pakatupanisya?
Yes. So in that way, can one say all dharmas are included in Pakatupanisya Pachya?
Moment to moment, trace back to eons and eons ago.
Condition this very moment, just one moment.
Just going back a bit to Nimitta and Anupiyachana, because I still have a little confusion. So in terms of development of Satipatthana, is it necessary to differentiate between nimitta and anupiyachana at all? So we know that it's the paying attention to either the nimitta or the anupiyachana or whatever paying attention to, and we know awareness can be aware of any reality, so it can be aware of attention or whatever is conditioned. But can one say anything about the level of sati, whether it knows the anupiyachana or anything like this?
When sati arises, does it have word or thinking about word when it is aware?
No.
So it is aware and panya develops, understanding the characteristic of that object, which is different from other objects. For example, right now, when there is the understanding, a glimpse of understanding that it's only a visible object, just this, and then there is hearing and sound appear. When there is awareness, it's just like that, no word. So no need to say whether it is aware of nimitta or anupayanjana.
The reason I asked is because I picked up some quote or a paraphrase of something you said about in the beginning this little sati and aware of characteristics as opposed to anubhyajana, and it didn't make sense to me. But
whenever there is understanding of visible object as just a reality, no attention to anything,
any details,
and one understand then what it's meant in Tipitaka about clinging to nimitta and anupayanjana only when there is awareness and understanding of the characteristic as a reality.
The reason for mentioning it is just to point out the clinging to nimitta and anupayanjana, which is different from awareness.
And just going back to the earlier discussion about sabbaya sampajanya and the weather, I didn't quite follow. Is there a connection between these two things? We were talking about the weather as a conditioning factor for something, but
we must use terms like concept in order to understand reality. So when we talk about weather, what reality it is, heat or cold?
Well, it's, yeah, through the body sense.
And people?
People?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm, people.
Good friend.
Yes.
The reality of good friend.
The reality of good friend.
There must be realities.
The reality of good friend is hearing useful things through the ear door.
Instead of saying so, we say good friend.
Why does it say that it's the concepts that are the Bhakti Upanisiyapachya? Why doesn't it say, oh, well, the short concepts just used as a shorthand, but really it's the realities that are the conditioning factor.
Reality, again.
Sound or thinking or
from
visible
whom,
object.
Right or wrong, long explanation.
But it really is a shorthand to say
But can we say the arahant is independent of the good friend? For him, the sabbaya sampajanya is, I mean, there's
no need to think about sabbaya sampajanya for arahata.
No. So the less one's understanding is developed, the more important these things are, in fact, and the more critical the conditions for developing understanding. Like for someone with very weak understanding, even a small distraction could be an interruption to their chance of developing understanding. But for someone with stronger understanding, it wouldn't be such a distraction. Doesn't matter what you call it, but there's an awful lot of wholesome jittas arising for the anagami, because the remaining latent tendencies are really quite few.
I'm just trying to pinpoint it a bit more in Abhidharma terms, because we usually say, okay, any kusala must be dana, sila, bhavana, and sila.
Okay, so when the anagami is brushing his teeth, why can't there be understanding, awareness?
If it's not with understanding, because there's not understanding with all jitas.
Anagami do still have the uttaccha, moha mulajita uttaccha.
There is no attachment to sense objects. When he's brushing his teeth, then unlikely to be much uddaccha or moha.
Right. He has very highly developed samatha because of the eradication of attachment to sensed or objects. So perhaps has a lot more panya than we.
Anagama, the Tipitaka says more samadhi.
In the text we read about two kinds of bhava tanha. Sometimes there's bhava tanha that's connected with idea of self, but the other meaning of bhava tanha just concerns becoming or rebirth, so the anagami still has the bhava tanha that is related to becoming or rebirth.
Does have the bhava tanha with
wrong. It just depends on the context, how one understands.
This question of a balance between, for example, satta and panya is one that I think we all find a little bit difficult to understand, because the idea of there being too much panya, for example, or too much satta, as it's kusala anyway, but too much of one form of kusala and not enough of the other.
When we read in the text about the balancing of the controlling faculties, for example, and it says this thing about if there's too much sadha and too little wisdom, it leads to blind faith, and if there's too little sadha and too much wisdom, it leads to cunning. And also in the Satipatthana Sutta, you know, it talks about the wise praise, the equalizing of faith and wisdom and concentration and energy, and too much of one leads to craftiness or whatever. These have never made any sense to me, because how can there be too much sadha or too much panya? Or so what does it mean about the balancing of the faculties, or too much wisdom leading to craftiness, or too much sadha leading to blind faith?
Before study Dhamma, many people have sadha, so one can see more sadha than panya.
Is that really kusala, that sadha?
Sadha can be kusala.
But usually we say, or I say, or I think that sadha only can really grow with panya, that it's only by, for example, understanding nama and rupa that there can be confidence that what the Buddha says is correct. I can't really, if you say, oh well, someone has a lot of sadha but not much panya, it doesn't really seem to be sadha.
Do we not see many people with only sadha, very great sadha, but they do not study?
But isn't this really, they think it's sadha, so, or we may think it's sadha, but
so
it doesn't really
talk
seem
about
to be
just the two. When we just talk about the two, sattha and panya,
yeah,
who have more and who have less, and what is more or what is less?
Don't they develop together? It's
no,
difficult for me to
not talk about when it's developed with viriya, sati and panya on the path, along the path. But we just talk about the two. But they think that they have a lot.
But all the conceit or the wrong idea that they have more than just the little is not really panya.
When we talk about the two, the panya and only, just the two.
It's very difficult for me to understand
because
this.
You see that those who learn Pali, who read Tipitaka, and they know the word,
but we know that real panya doesn't depend on
right,
how much Pali,
right,
how much Tipitaka,
right,
how much time at the foundation,
right,
how many books read. We know that real panya, which directly understands realities, is
talk about these five unbalanced. We talk about when there is no development, which hinders the development of the path because it's not balanced.
People sometimes mention it, and then of course it leads to lots of wrong ideas, because then people think, oh okay, I don't have enough sattva, so I need to do this. So it leads to lots of wrong views or ideas or self-balancing faculties or something. So for example, if someone reads or considers they have a lot of understanding and not enough sadha, and then they think, oh okay, now I need to develop more sadha. So I think it's
so
not helpful at all.
It's still being done by an eye.
Yeah.
Still being done by an eye. There's no monotonous there. You know, it's still thinking I'm doing it. So it's,
but I just question when we read about, for example, a lot of sadha and not much panya, a lot of panya and not much sadha, and how this leads to craftiness or foolishness or blind faith or whatever. I'm just thinking that maybe it's just someone's idea. They have an idea, they have a lot of understanding, or they have an idea, they have a lot of sadha, but it's not real understanding. Because if it was real understanding, then
They
have to go together. So when we read this in the text, it's just the wrong idea that there is a lot of one or the other, not understanding that they have to go together.
Because you're talking about real panya,
right,
which has to grow with sattva. Yeah. But when they're not balanced, we can see that it's not the path. Yeah.
Not real understanding. Maybe you could just say a little bit, because sometimes we discuss this also on the list about the importance of studying Pali or the texts or whatever, and I think it's very easy all the time to always misunderstand what the real development of understanding is, and to have an idea of having higher understanding or higher sadha or something like that. I mean, I think it's quite an important topic because this balancing is of faculties comes up quite a lot. Is there anything else you can
say? The point of studying is to understand reality. Otherwise, what you think you know by words in this life, in what this language, next life, different language. So you forget everything.
What about the comments about, for example, Pali being the real Buddha Vachana and the real Buddha language and some importance in this life to being familiar with Pali as an accumulation for other lives?
What's the objective of studying it?
Well, I think different people have different objectives. For example, some people feel they can really only understand the teaching by studying it in Pali. I mean, this is a very common idea, and that by reading and studying the Pali, the meaning will be deeper. And we know that for certain terms, it can be very helpful.
Only but for those who already understand reality. For example, Pali might be your language last life. Now you forget. You might have recited lots of Pali, Sutta, Abhidhamma, but now no understanding of Pali.
But that can be the industry of reality.
No matter in what language.
But we can also say we should be very grateful that the teachings have come down to us in Pali, because this is the way they have kept their authenticity. So we should be very grateful to those who have studied and learned the Pali in order to transmit it, in order to translate.
Otherwise, there's no point. Just remember the sound of Pali and the meaning of the word.
So one should just study or learn as much as is helpful to condition more understanding of realities. Finish. Yeah. What about translation work or more study in order to help others have access
to understand realities clearer and better?
Yeah. You know, because one could have a good command of Pali language, but does not understand the deep meaning of it. And there's so many experts this day too that do understand the Pali language. That can be pretty helpful. But those folk may not understand the deep meaning of the word, but they can translate it.
If the goal then is understanding realities or understanding more about realities, can you say a bit about how this understanding is developed? It's one thing to realize that the world as we experience it or as we go through our daily life is not the world as it really is. We understand intellectually that there are different experiences through different doorways, but still the world appears to us as a world of people and things, and there's a lot of kilesa in the daily life. So what is the key to developing understanding that cuts through this?
To understand reality, yes. Like now.
Well, why can't we do that, even if now we're talking about
One can do that.
Nobody do it.
Right, well, I understand there's no one, but still. So is it just a question of there being lots of ignorance at the moment?
One begins to know what ignorance is, not understanding this moment as a reality. That's why we learn a lot about Nama and Rupa and Paramadhamma in order to really understand that there is no one at all. There is thinking, yes, but not me. Someone who's trying so hard to understand, but not that person. Different jetasikas. But that's still the idea of self all the time, as long as there is no awareness of any reality at all. Or even there is moment of being aware of a reality, there is lots of I again.
It's amazing how even when one was sitting here having a Dhamma discussion, how often idea of self creeps in all the time. Even when one's asking a Dhamma question or listening or all the time.
Very common.
I suppose there's a tendency to think there must be some way of, say, trying to see the kilesa of the moment or trying to see the visible object.
I think that when there is the studying of the teachings, there is no idea that I am doing this in order to understand that. But developing understanding from the word that one is reading and contemplate about the reality of that moment. For example, now we are talking about visible object, and we have to talk about visible object many, many times more in one's life, as long as there is not yet the understanding of it, even a glimpse. So one lesson that visible object is that which can contact the eye base. It's so short, it arises, so it appears and then gone completely. Completely. So it's in one's mind, well established, to condition the understanding of visible object right now. When there is the understanding of the visible object right now, no need to think about awareness at all, because without awareness there cannot be that kind of understanding or that level of understanding. Even it's so low, very little, but it can grow. And one knows that there is only one way, by understanding. So if one closes one's eyes and try very hard to experience the arising and falling away of reality, but as long as there is no understanding of visible object right now, no moment for the experiencing of the arising and falling away of reality.
When you said a moment ago, gone completely, but because there's all this continuity, then how does gone completely come into it?
Because the rupa has only 7 moments citta's lifespan.
Right, but just by thinking, of course.
By understanding what Buddha had enlightened.
But if the visible object is seamlessly continuous.
What about it? Sound? How can it come to be known?
Sound is easier to think of as...
I mean that what
right.
I want to see.
Yeah. Oh, well, again, just by thinking, though, you have to accept so many premises. Yeah, but then you have to say, but seeing and hearing can't happen simultaneously, whereas in fact they appear to... Yes, but then the way it appears is both are happening constantly and simultaneously and continuously.
When there is no awareness at all, it's like the flux keep on going so fast.
Yes.
But whenever there is awareness of a reality, at that moment, the realization that there is awareness, just very fast, but it's there. So when this can go on through 6 doorways, there can be the well-established of the understanding of different realities from one characteristic to another characteristic. So one can understand that all day there must be different realities, different characteristics of different realities. That's all. Where's I then? So it needs only the development of satipatthana awareness and panya, which begins very slowly to develop understanding of different characteristics as realities, different realities.
I was just going to say, if myself, that sound, visible objects, don't arise, and if you've ever tried to learn a page or something with the radio on, flips backwards and forwards so quickly you get to the end of the page and you learn nothing. I don't know if that's any help.
This level of considering, contemplating, studying by I, not by awareness itself. See? So there are many levels. Pakatupanitsyapachya condition different level, but it have to start from the very beginning.
What pick you up, I'm kind of interested in all these references and on Pakatupanitsya. You say Pakatupanitsya condition different level. What is the connection with Pakatupanitsya?
Because people are different by Pakatupanitsya.
Because of the different accumulations or inclinations.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That was